yesterday I was talking to our correspondent, and she was telling me, like, even recently, just in the last few days, 100 more checkpoints have been added to the thousands of whatever that already exists in the West Bank that is totally disconnected, the Palestinian towns, from each other. So talking about recognizing a Palestinian state is one thing, but tell me, what do you think is concrete about this?
Well, the nations that have decided to recognize Palestine not only are obviously opening embassies and creating channels of communication, diplomatic channels, which before were done in other matters. So the Palestinian voice is increasing in these countries, and they will have an official recognition this way. Like I said, practically how this will translate over time, we have yet to see. I mean, if you look at even the situation in Afghanistan, what is the recognition by Russia brought them? And there are chances and opportunities to be exploited that were not available before. How that's done, I agree the chances of it are slim in the beginning. I mean, if you look at Palestinian recognition that's happened already in Spain and other European nations that did it before, what's the benefit that they've had? And that's a question that needs to be studied. But definitely, the more recognition you have is something that Israel can't deny you. Mm-hmm. And if the idea of the two-state solution, if I may just end with this, is going anywhere, if it sounded dead before, it is more alive now than it was before October 7th.
Okay. Well, Syed Mohsen, now many leaders may be talking about the Palestinian issue at the General Assembly. What do you make of the fact that some of the same ones who are condemning the genocide in Gaza are at the same time helping the Israelis, whether we're talking about Muslim countries or Western countries?
Well, because it's all set up like this, Marizia. The reality is that this is an order that has come from the same axis of evil. I can't describe them as anything else. And in it are involved Arab monarchs, Western so-called democratic states, transnational corporations, the whole transhumanist movement even. I mean, the neoliberal movement, the neoconservative movement. This is all part of an axis which has a plan, and it does things in a coordinated way. And Israel is at the heart of its plans. The injustice, the imperialism, the colonialism, it was all part and parcel of that existential evil, as far as I'm concerned. And so what the UN, indeed, and virtually every other body, the IAEA, go on to the WHO, they're all involved. I mean, let's first of all come to this reality that the illusion of some kind of international order which has any justice or is in some way free or is in some way fair or wants something good for humanity, that's all utter, absolute nonsense. And the genocide in Gaza is the biggest evidence yet of that being the reality. Now, let's get on to the actual practicalities of this so-called solution. Have they talked in this document about Israel and its apartheid? Have they talked about the injustice and how they're going to stop that? Are we going to see the prevention of apartheid? Are we going to see the dismantling of the Israeli apartheid state as we know it? Are we going to see that the Palestinian Authority, for that matter, the puppet Palestinian Authority, who presumably is the one that these people want to confer the authority to? Well, that's not even an elected body. The PA Authority lost its authority long ago. It's basically an authoritarian regime presided over by Abbas, who's long expired, his term has long expired in any kind of political democratic sense. And he's essentially a puppet who does what they want him to. Is he going to lead this new so-called Palestinian state? And in what way is he going to do it that's different from what he's done before? Because what he's done before is absolutely sell the rights of Palestinians, allowed these settlements to happen. He's penalized any of the armed resistance, which is actually fought for the Palestinians has put up some kind of struggle. Indeed, he's going to be just another sellout who's going to basically go after even the families of those resistance soldiers who basically defended or tried to defend Gaza. So I see no future, no hope in a two-state solution. It's like saying the Nazis, when they lost the war against the supposed good guys, the Allies, which they certainly weren't, that was another imperialist exercise in domination in Europe. But it's like saying you'd expect the Jews to stay in a sort of an existence with Nazis while the Nazis were still in power even after the war. That's what you're asking. You're asking the Zionists to continue an Israeli apartheid state, and you're asking the Palestinians to accept that, to live next door to them, as if they will even allow that, given the reality on the ground of like a Jewish supremacist violent movement, which has now captured the most of Israel. Most of Israelis are part of that movement. So I just think this is completely la-la land. The UN is living in la-la land if it thinks it really is going to achieve anything. The ground reality is that there is a one-state solution is on offer, and that is that the Palestinians must all have a right to a referendum, and it's the Palestinians who are both in the diaspora and those who live in occupied Palestine who have the right to vote on what should be the future of the state. The Israelis need to be basically, the Zionists, the settler immigrants need to be expelled, basically.
Okay, all right. Well, Syed Moaz, U.S. President Donald Trump asked what is the purpose of the United Nations during his speech, saying that it writes strongly worded letters, but empty words don't solve wars. It is an interesting point that he's making. I mean, your thoughts on what he said and why he has said it.
You know, you're absolutely right. He knows the truth because this is exactly what's been going on. But ironically, the frustration of the United States, you have to also understand that now United States is the single country in the Security Council that's blocking Palestinian full membership. This is important. Now, Donald Trump can't just stand with European allies. He has to stand alone. And he is now standing alone with Netanyahu, and he's realizing the difficult situation that Netanyahu has put him in. And this is why they're upset with the European nations, because at first they used to lie on their shoulders and used to have them do a little bit of their dirty work. Now the Europeans have said, listen, we don't want being part of this. And even if this means diplomatically, what it's clearly illustrating, there's been a diplomatic failure of the United States. We see Mark Rubio trying to run around, trying to get support, but wasn't able to prevent France, the UK, Australia, and other nations from recognizing Palestine. It was a failure. It's a diplomatic failure, and it's a losing horse. And the thing is, when is the United States going to get out of the way? So you're right. Yeah, I do agree with Trump, what he's saying is empty words. It is symbolic. And I do agree with my colleague Abbas. And we've yet to see any fruition for this, but it is symbolic nonetheless. It does have certain value. Is it enough value? I completely agree. It's not enough. It's not enough for an immediate ceasefire. It's not enough for the justice for the Palestinian people, not just after October 7th and the many who suffered, but all the way going back to the great issue since 1948. And even before that, during the British mandate, when the promises were made then. So there is a lot to be achieved from there. But right now, the United States is feeling alone on an island, and it's looking around, and there's no one there but Israel. So when are they going to drop? This is something where I think we are going to start looking. That pressure is definitely going to build on.
All right. Well, Syed Mohsen, Trump also addressed the Russia-Ukraine issue, saying that he thought it would be easier to end this. But he says that the key to it all is actually tariffs, that if Russia doesn't end the war, the United States would impose strict tariffs, which would end the war very quickly. But he also at the same time accused NATO countries of hypocrisy, because he said that they're buying oil and gas from Russia at the same time that they're fighting Russia. I mean, your thoughts on it?
Well, Donald Trump is just a spoiler, isn't he? He's been placed there by the people behind the scenes who really run America, the banksters, et cetera, and the moneylender mafia. And he's just an individual who's there to create disruption. His whole purpose is to disrupt the American society from the broad consensus it has had. There's a whipping up of internal fragmentation and fault lines, which are genuine in the US. He's there to also create disruption in Europe. He was sounding off about ridiculous things, just stuff which you'd think, as a political analyst, I'm even loath to even have to address them. But, saying Sadiq Khan is bringing a Sharia state to London and Britain, this is the sort of nonsense that Trump trumpets, basically. He's there just to create a pantomime, there to distract, and nobody can pick him up on it. I mean, if anybody had a discussion around the points which Trump, dwells on with any serious kind of political think tanks, and you'd be laughed out of the room. Yet here is the supposed leader of the free world allowed to get away and to occupy space and time with absolute nonsense. And in terms of Russia, well, he's been saying, before he came into office, he said he would solve the Russian-Ukraine crisis within a matter of days. Well, it's been several months and longer that he's been fiddling around. There's no nearer to the solution. The reality is that the powers that be want war. They want war in Europe. They want war in West Asia. They want war because they make money out of war, and they also distract people with war because their wider objective is the development of a new digital transhumanist order, in which we're all kind of moving towards a complete new reality. And in order for them to deliver that, they've got to have us distracted with wars, with health issues, with chaos, with supposed climate catastrophism, and they're unleashing it all at the same time. That's why you're kind of spinning constantly from one thing to another, and Gaza and the genocide in West Asia and the war on Iran, which is imminent, are all part of that effort to keep people distracted, to keep us in anxiety, to fear, and the public on the ground is in its own turmoil, not only economically, but also just the impact of seeing children with their limbs blown off and what's gone on in Palestine. This is all deliberate. It's a deliberate exercise in creating this kind of sense of chaos. Mm. And I think, to be honest with you, that's where we are. There's a bigger picture around Gaza, and to be honest, these institutions like the UN, who have the Agenda 2030, don't forget, who Ayatollah Khamenei very wisely has expelled from Iran, because mm-hmm. it's that Agenda 2030 which is being played out, because there's a target for these transnational corporate money mafias, and of which Zionism is very much a part, and Western imperialism is very much a part of that process. I'm afraid that we're inexorably heading that way unless people wake up and join the dots. And of course, we have to feel for Gaza and the empathy for those poor individuals there being used as an experiment, as guinea pigs, as tests for AI and modern technology of how you control a population when it doesn't do what you're telling it. And that's what they're flexing their muscles for. Ukraine and Russia is a war that could be avoided overnight. It made no sense for Europe to go into this. It makes no sense for America to be involved in it. Yet here we are, because it will disrupt the food supplies. It can disrupt the stability in Europe. Or it can destroy the economy around the world, as will fighting Iran also achieve the same objective. There's a march towards disruption and a global disruption, which I believe is deliberately being engineered.
Well, Said Maz, I mean, how can the UN function properly when a country like the United States has a leader who simply lies about reality, saying that, for example, Iran is a terrorist nation and that the country's enrichment capabilities have been completely demolished? Now, this is the same country which has the most influence in the United Nations.
Yeah, no, and you know, let me just start off by saying the United Nations is not the perfect organization. The League of Nations collapsed. It was rebuilt on that. It was rebuilt by the powers who won. Clearly, they did improve on the League of Nations and the flaws in that. But it is a flawed organization that will and must need reform, particularly in the participation of not just Muslim countries, but many countries in the global south that have become independent since its formation. So, yes, that is on the books. And guess what? Trump thought that the United States ran the United Nations. That was well in front. Corrected when he pulled all that funding from the United Nations. And yes, there is a panic. There is a panic right now. I'm in Geneva, so I know. But that has not collapsed the system. The system is still here, but it's in need of reform. And
okay.
This step is in that direction. This step to recognize Palestine is one of those elements that hereby authorizes international actors for states and peoples who have rights that are being abused. The least you can do is at least symbolically recognize their existence. We hope from this, not only are we talking about the symbolic recognition, but potentially sanctions. potentially an increased participation in the ICJ and the court. The Palestinian argument there will become stronger with these countries' participation.
Right.
So these are things that do have value. And let me just add this before I go. Understand that the negative impact on the other side that's going in favor of Palestine is the Israeli relationship with these countries is going to get hurt. They are already threatening to retaliation. How will they retaliate? They will break intelligence links. This is something that may lead to something else. So we need to actually look at this as a cascading effect, not only on one side for the Palestinians, but how that relationship reflects with the Israelis. And I think that may also add some benefit.
Okay, well, we have to keep our eyes on that and see what's happening. But that brings us to the end of this program. Said Moshe, international law expert and geopolitical analyst out of Geneva. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Thank you both for being with me, and thank you for staying with us on another Spotlight.
Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth
Station.
This is Asma, and I'm so happy to be here.
And this is Masuma.
I hope wherever you are, you're doing well, and everything is just fine with you. How about you, Masuma? Are you okay?
Yes, thank God.
How's everything going?
Quite chaotic, but it's fine.
Still, we're surviving. Yeah.
Yes.
That's the spirit of a student.
Yes.
The orphan boy, who was called Al-Amin, the trustworthy, even before he spoke as a prophet, and his fragrance, when he walked in the streets, was actually getting everywhere, and not just the physical fragrance that attracted the entire humanity towards him, but it was the very aromatic and humanly aroma of this person to attract human beings to him. And we're talking about our dear Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So this is going to be the topic of our today's episode of Youth Station. And I guess this is very interesting to talk about a person who's been born centuries before.
Yes.
And still we feel the attachment to him.
And we still want to know more. We
yeah.
still want to know how he went through all those, extreme
yeah.
society problems. And yet he was Very perfect.
You know, sometimes in our real ordinary life, we see some people who've got this magnetic character.
Yes.
And they attract everybody to themselves. And then we come to compare it to Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, and specifically to the prophet who is called the prophet of kindness.
Yes.
He's the prophet of all kindness mm-hmm. to humankind. And he's the door, actually, to God's kindness as well. So, and then we come to compare to him and then realize that if these ordinary people could be this amazing, then what about that spiritually chosen person?
It's out of my imagination.
Exactly.
It's just, it's too beautiful. I can't imagine.
Exactly. It's always a very enchanting discussion
yes.
for all the real believers. Mm-hmm. Whenever you talk about these things, you can see this feeling of, okay, I want to know more and I want to mm-hmm. talk more about it. Because right now that we talk about fragrance, you know, it's very interesting that when you talk about all of his details, you feel like you need to talk more
and
you
more
want
and
to
more.
Dive into all of these details.
And this is very interesting that these all virtues were also valued back then when society had a very chaotic
yeah.
and different from nowadays
It was
norms.
Actually deviated
yes.
from humanity, much less from religion. Just imagine at the time where people used to kill their daughters because she's going to bring like nothing for her family, then there comes a human being that is actually the epitome of kindness. And then he changes the entire perspective of the people of his own era, who were a really difficult people, to have the opposite perspective.
And it is very interesting that sometimes people say that nowadays the society is going to the extremely, you know, wrong side and nobody, you know, values the virtues and
yeah.
righteous people. But I think that no matter how worse the situation goes, I think it's not going to be that different from back then. And no matter how hard or, you know, wrong the society is going, the values that God has given us is something in it and we can accept it.
And we have to practice it and we have to enrich it and reinforce it, not to let it go because the currents of society are not helping
yes.
me. And I'm just actually swimming against it. So these are very important. And also the thing that I was, okay, let me put it this way. What is the first thing that you remember whenever you talk about the prophet?
Kindness. As you already mentioned,
yeah.
the first one, that is the kindness, rahmatul lil alameen. Very beautiful.
It's very deep, you know. Our discussion is not going to convey what we are talking
mm-hmm.
about because that is so deep. To be blessing for the entire humanity is beyond the grasp of language.
Indeed. And we also remember the time when people were very, very rude to him, yet he was very kind. When he could, you know, take revenge.
That's why he is called the beloved of God.
Indeed.
He's loved by God. And this is an honor for all the Muslims, I guess. We are proud of our prophet because whatever he stands for, it is unique to him.
Indeed.
It is his singularity. Of course, we have, with all due respect for all the prophets, because
yes,
we all
yes.
do believe that they are the succession that has
mm-hmm.
to continue. And the last of them is our dear prophet, who is the beloved of God. Because of all the hardships he have been through and because of all the blessings and kindness he brought to human being with his existence and the essence of his existence.
And I think the most beautiful part of it is that this, you know, trustworthiness was not just after he became prophet. This
yeah.
kindness, this character, this beautiful moral role model was role model from the very beginning. From
as
very
much
beginning.
As I hate to go for a break right now, but we have to go for it.
Sure.
And then we come back with the discussion of our dear prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam.
In that era,
mm-hmm.
there were many people who did not like Prophet, obviously. He had many enemies, we know it.
Of all course. The prophets had.
Yes, they all had.
Like, nobody's going to be kind to goodness.
So true. The fact that they confessed and confirmed that prophet was Al-Amin, trustworthy, is next level. See, if my friends come and tell you that Masuma is nice, then you're going to be like, yeah,
of course. You can trust her.
Yeah, but if my enemies, if I have any, they're going to come and say, yeah, Masuma is trustworthy, that is next level. Exactly. Your enemies are talking good about you.
Yeah, they confessing it, it's a real deal.
It's just something very perfect that we think, sometimes we think that this is not possible.
By the way, you're listening to Youth Station. I'm Asma, and Masume is with me, and we're having a very interesting and lovely discussion about the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. So it has been mentioned in all the narrations that we already talked about it, that he is the loved one by God, and he is very special to God because he is the one through his direction the entire humanity is going to be actually blessed and is going to experience kindness, the ultimate version of kindness. And he, actually, when we read the narrations and when we hear the recitation of all these narrations that tell us that in the day of judgment, the Prophet, he himself is going to pick his people, like his nation. And he has asked God, let me be the one who's, who's going to be an account of all these, my own nation. So this much of responsibility and this much of kindness, and the fact that he calls himself the father of us,
it's just
he and Imam Ali alayhi salam being the fathers of the ummah, of the nation, this is very interesting. And we all have this link and bond to Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, and specifically the Prophet, as our fathers, as the ones we trust, like the way we trust our fathers. And we even expect more from them because we know that they are that much trustworthy.
And also we have in Holy Quran, in Surah Qalam, that, and indeed you are of a great moral character.
Yeah.
This is just enough for us.
The confession done by the Holy Book of Quran.
It is just the last thing that we needed. And when we look deep in the back then, I'm sure even today, nowadays, people are not very nice to their families. I might be very nice to you, but I might be a very bad-tempered person at home.
Unfortunately.
And it is very special that he changed this in the society, how he treated his family, how he treated women of his family with respect and love.
And interestingly, at a time where people were just degrading girls, the Prophet comes and his entire progeny starts from his daughter.
Yes, beautiful.
So it goes against the current of society back in time, where people were so disrespectful toward girls. He not only came to actually stand up for women's rights at a time when people did not recognize even women.
As
much
human.
much less their rights. He came. And he reinforced their respect. He actually confirmed that it must be so, that you must be treating women with too much of respect. Not only he did that, but also his entire family is going to actually start from his daughter.
And that is very unique. Because even nowadays, some people think that we're just gonna be, you know, successful if we have boys.
Yeah.
While we know that the truth has been told to us even so much back then.
Exactly.
It's just very beautiful.
At a time where people did not have any perception of women's rights.
Yeah, we're not talking about nowadays, just for the matter of the,
you
know,
clarity.
We're
talking about dark ages.
Yes, dark ages. Very dark. Very dark. And yet he, you know,
an open-minded prophet comes. And then he tells them that, okay, she is a human being just like you. And the only thing that might prioritize you two to each other is your piety.
Piety, indeed.
And that's the only thing. So this is a great change. It's a drastic change. And not just this. He practices kindness with even his enemies, as you just rightly mentioned. And then him being so honest. This is another story to talk about.
Asadiq.
His honesty is something else.
It's just when the time when people would lie like it's nothing, honesty is just very, very hard.
Nowadays, if I'm talking about us ordinary people, like if somebody comes to me and accuses me of something that is not right, what would I do?
Get angry, probably?
Get angry and then not forget about it. And then maybe I even get into too much of problems with them. And then if the situation comes for me to make it up for them, I would.
Yes.
I definitely would. So, but then what about the prophet?
They would call him magician.
They would accuse him of different kind of bad things and attribute stuff to him. But what he did was to be so kind to him. And even his grandsons were just like him, no matter how much people accused them. But at the end of the day, when they came to these very honorable creatures of God, what they got was all kindness. Yes. They never retaliated. They never made it up for them. And they never accused them of the real thing they were of it.
And also, you know, in society back then, they were very rude to servants and orphans. And our prophet, SubhanAllah, he was very kind to orphan and he always took care of them. Yeah. And he was very nice to servants. So maybe if I was, you know, in back then, it would be very hard for me to respect a servant.
Exactly.
While I am such, you know, a noble person.
Because they were wealthy. Yes. The ones who had servants, they were wealthy. And they saw themselves at the
superior,
very high level of the world. So
but he changed the norms. He changed
he
the
changed
norms.
He changed it all.
And it sounds very easy to say he changed the norms, but when we think it is
very
hard.
Because look at today.
Yes.
Is it easy to break
it's
all
not.
The norms?
Although,
no,
like,
not.
Right now, we see that, okay, now it's a little modern era, people are a little more educated, yet it's hard to break the norms. And he, in that, you know, short life that we can say he had, he changed a lot. He changed the world into a lot better place.
Well, the more we talk about it, the more details would pop up in our mind, and I guess one episode of Youth Station is not going to do the respect and loyalty to talk about all the details of the prophet, but this is just in this is just done to make you think about him, because even on a daily basis, if you think of the prophet and you just mention his name, that would bring happiness and blessings into your lives. So I would end today's episode with this words that his fragrance lingered in the streets of Medina. May ours linger in the lives of those we touch. So this was all for today. I hope you have enjoyed it. Until another episode of Youth Station. Wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fear in my heart, got nothing left to lose. I saw my loved ones die. Oh, I swear that I won't give in. By God, you'll never win. I'll fight for what's right. Nothing can stand in my way. Even if I get knocked down, I will stand my has become so cheap. So many orphans weep, they forgot how to smile. Oh, I cannot understand just how somebody can murder an innocent child. Spend their lives only lost in vain. Even if I get knocked down, I will stand my ground, and I'll never hide or run away. Love will prevail, by God it will. Love will prevail. I refuse to fail. Love will prevail. God made me free. You can't take that away from me. Freedom is my destiny. I have a dream, and my dream is to see, all my people smile, see all them free and proud. I feel the wind of peace, 'cause with hardship comes ease. That's why I won't lose faith, and I know that God is great, so I'll never.
For millennia, Iranian scholars have actively contributed to advancing knowledge in science and technology. And today, Iran is part of the fast pace at which technological innovation is developing using knowledge-based research. Energy-efficient light bulbs or COVID-19 testing kits are just some of the knowledge-based products that you might be familiar with. Iranian knowledge-based companies have brought many social and economic advantages for people and generating billions of dollars in revenues from its product.
Oh, hello. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly show that looks at profits, markets, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. Today's program will focus on how advanced technologies are created. We wanted to see how an idea can be transformed into a marketable, specialized product, and how we'll uncover how they have contributed to the economy. Enough said. Let's walk through today's Bazaar.
Our journey began at a company that works closely with the Islamic Azad University of Iran. Virajin Akam was first established in 2008 and specializes in making technology for analyzing genes and viruses. Its main products are panel H kits and devices used in medical laboratories. Currently, it has commercialized two of its products for virus detection tests. As part of its vision for the future, this knowledge-based company is looking to expand its product list to include molecular analysis kits for cancer cells. The production unit incorporates the latest technology while including the highest quality of raw material. This company uses in-depth scientific research and know-how, which is carried out by expert staff to manufacture its high-tech products. it has received its production licenses from the Ministry of Health and Medical Education and obtained international standardization certifications too. This means its products, while matching national standards, also adhere to international regulations, allowing them to easily compete in global markets. This company produces 20 different types of kits and a variety of diagnostic kits as well. The production facilities are capable of producing thousands of testing kits per week. There are numerous opportunities for investment in such a company, particularly as it is already standing on the threshold of exporting its products.
As you might know, medical testing kits are very sensitive items which need to be dependable and accurate. Their continuous accuracy is the most important aspect of their use. A lot of science and research goes into making these products, which are the tools doctors use to help patients. For this reason, quality assurance is key in being able to market these items.
The heart of this company is its highly equipped quality control division. Here, all products are tested for performance and accuracy in each stage of production. This includes testing the raw material used to make these kits. This department is essential for maintaining quality and manufacturing items with zero failure rates. But that's not all. The quality control unit is also home to the research and development department. One of the activities at this department is to reverse engineer certain items, such as kits used for the study of genetics, which are currently imported. One of the competitive advantages of this company is that it manufactures medical devices that were previously imported. Indigenizing these items has saved the medical sector millions of dollars from capital flight. Another advantage of this knowledge-based company is its link to the Islamic Azad University's Technology Development Center, meaning the research and development division of this company is able to directly benefit from scientific advancements and services provided by the academic institution. This company has faced numerous challenges over the years, but its trump card has always been its uniquely progressive approach to development. The US sanctions have marginally impacted businesses in this field by hampering international money transfers. This knowledge-based company views the sanctions as an opportunity to strengthen productions, filling the market void while reducing the country's dependence on imports.
Research driven by scientific inquiry plays a significant role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. Academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and marketable products, and several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
The company we discussed earlier is an example of a knowledge-based company that was born from the support of a growth program at the Islamic Azad University. The program is called Roshd Center, and its main activity is to incubate startups and entrepreneurship. The center is a platform that supports the creation and developments of new businesses in the field of advanced technology development as they start up. It provides services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully implement their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. These services include offering workspace facilities and managerial, technical, and legal consultations. Usually, startups are incubated at this center for around 3 to 5 years. These centers serve as a type of technical infrastructure and offer a framework for sustainable business growth. The incubators also pursue broader goals, such as regional economic growth, and diversify the economy and investors. It also provides assistance to women and society's minorities in their entrepreneurial endeavors. The advantage of a university incubator is its upfront link to live research and the most recent discoveries. It is a place where scientific advancement directly meets technology development. Azad universities have some 400 campuses nationwide and hundreds of thousands of students enrolling annually. Each campus is equipped with a Rushd Center. For example, the North Tehran unit has 22 projects currently incubating.
But universities aren't the only place where incubators are found. Science and technology parks are also another area that offer similar services to knowledge-based startup and technology-developing businesses. Many of their products are presently streamlined into the market and are also exported to destination markets abroad.
Tech parks are another place where advanced technology is developed for various industries. Based on figures from the Ministry of Research, Science and Technology, there are 42 tech parks and 186 incubators spread across the country. The number of knowledge-based companies has steadily increased over the years. If there were 50 high-tech firms in 2013, now there are 125 times more than that number in 2021. Right now, there are over 6,200 high-tech firms and knowledge-based companies nationwide. Many of these businesses are active in the field of information and communication technology, machinery equipment, and electronic products. Plus, a large number of the companies are actively producing medical devices and pharmaceuticals. Last year, tech and knowledge-based firms raked in over $5 billion in internal revenues. That's according to statistics from Iran's National Innovation Fund. The Science and Technology Office of the Vice Presidency estimates exports of these products will generate $1 billion in foreign revenues by the end of the year. High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. And nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Data from the International Web of Science shows Iran was globally ranked as 16th in 2019 for its citation work. All things considered, Iran's tech ecosystem is flourishing. Several industries have benefited from indigenized technology that has facilitated big advancements productions.
Okay, it's time for me to take a short break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. So, take it away.
A general classification divides enterprises into two distinct categories. The first is labor-intensive enterprises, and the second is knowledge-intensive enterprises. I'm sure that you're familiar with the former, but the latter is primarily concerned with problem-solving, research and development, creativity, and it heavily relies on intellectual skills. Where I'm standing right now is a hub for knowledge-intensive enterprises in Iran. Pardis Technology Park is home to more than 270 companies, including SMEs, small and medium-sized startups, and large companies. Some of them have already introduced valuable and essential products to the market, whereas the others are still in their burgeoning phases and are clawing their way up. And this place acts as an incubator for them. This tech park is one of the largest of its kind in the region, and was built in an effort to reduce the cost of importing knowledge and provide professional support for creativity and innovation. And I'm going to tell you this, the result has been phenomenal. In this week's feature program, we're going to learn more about Pardis Technology Park.
Pardis Technology Park is located in an area measuring almost 60 hectares, which is expandable to 1,000 hectares and is situated 20 kilometers northeast of Tehran. It's under the auspices of the Vice Presidency for Science and Technology and a 14-entity board of trustees comprising of corporate and real bodies from ministries, science centres and academies, headed by the first Vice President of the country. Its objectives are many-fold, but they are all directed towards the growth and development of the economy of Iran. It's set to commercialise the research results and establish sustainable ties between universities and industries, creating synergy between private and state sectors, just to name a few.
When a group of people come to each other and meet each other and make a team, so they need some ambient to help them to grow. At the same time, they need some mentors, some financial aids, and so many things. They need to be a kind of environment to help them to grow. That's why this building and this park is also called a kind of growing system, growing ecosystem. For
PTP is considered the most pioneering and advanced and largest technology park in Iran, and it's well distinguished by many reputed foreign and domestic organizations. The technology park has great potentials to turn into a major center for economic, research and scientific activities. It also meets the requirements for linking to actual and potential global markets, and its wide-ranging activities have so far been successful.
This park is not limited to knowledge-intensive companies, but also houses and assists technology companies by definition. There are different buildings here, and in order to construct new buildings, some certain standards have to be met. There's a board of architectural design that observes and makes sure that each building has unique and creative architectural elements. This is done to make the park visually attractive. Different events are held annually at this place, during which new ideas that are worthy of being marketed, new findings of the research done by the companies that are based in this place, and also new products are presented.
We are manufacturing the anesthesia machine with ventilator, which has been created after 7 years of R&D in our company, and it's about 2 years we have provided this unit to the medical centers. Actually, this unit used to be imported from abroad, and by having our production in the medical centers, the hospitals, of course, we are fully providing this product and no need to import anymore.
I, for one, was amazed to learn how wide the scale of scientific and technological achievements of the park have been so far, and couldn't help but take pride in Iran's technological prowess. Let's meet another pioneer.
Yeah, this is called the knowledge-based company because we created a company called Ziztakhmir, which is a pioneer in probiotic industry in Iran. We make the initial effort around 20 years back in the University of Tehran. We established an R&D-based facility there. And after 5 years, we managed to establish a company and started to produce supplements, probiotic supplements, which were very new at that time.
Companies and their research and development centers should subscribe to one of the areas specified and supported by the park. These include, but are not limited to, telecommunication, biotechnology, nanotechnology, pharmaceutical materials, and more. Last year, according to reports, this park exported 50 of its products to 22 countries, and its export value amounted to 27 million euros. And so, Paradis Technology Park proved itself as an important asset to the country's economic apparatus to help it fight the deleterious effects of draconian sanctions imposed on Iran.
PTP has its own rather unique way to acknowledge the contribution of international scientists who at some point have added something to the park, and that is sculpting their busts. These sculptures, which are spread across the park, give it a museum-like touch, and of course for visitors, it's both informative and entertaining. PTP appears to have been an interesting technology hub for people outside of Iran too. Many ambassadors, politicians, ministers, and scientific figures have visited PTP so far.
What you saw in this report was only a small part of the first phase of this large complex, which is called Innovation Paradise. There are going to be some other parts added to this large complex. The second phase is called Health Paradise, and the third phase is called Entrepreneurship Paradise. According to the expansion plan of the park, the complex will eventually measure up to 1,000 hectares, and that will make it the most important technology zone in West Asia. The contribution of these hubs to the overall economic growth of the country is an indicative of their importance in identifying and presenting the country's technological capabilities and, of course, in accelerating its growth. And maybe this large plane over there is a symbol of that.
Well, that covers our program for today. Take care, everyone. I'm Samson Zees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, help the needy. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on I'm British Radio, me sister Zainab, and obviously, so when we're talking about helping the needy, in this circumstance, I'm actually not talking about, like, let's say, giving financial or material help. I'm going to focus more on the idea that we help, maybe also by giving our time and giving advice, maybe even sharing knowledge. Because really, in our day-to-day lives, because obviously we all have very busy lives where we work, maybe we study, maybe we also have families, young children, or children who are at university. But you know, our lives are busy. So one of the most precious things for us, for sure, is our time. And I think it's much easier for us typically to just give some money, donate something. But I think often we are much more reluctant to really be generous with our time. And yet very often, this is the one thing that could really benefit others, and that is the one thing that people really need from us. Because, you know, people have issues, people have problems, people are going through challenges, I think, these days more and more. So maybe if you think, if you speak with people in your surroundings, family members, or your relatives, neighbors, other friends, colleagues, typically you might find these days that people are going through so many different hardships. Maybe a family member has cancer, is ill, has had an accident. Maybe someone has lost their job. Maybe another friend is finding it difficult to scrape together a deposit or a security bond for their next rental. Just sort of listen in, observe what's going on. And, you know, obviously sometimes people, yeah, do need money, do need that sort of help. But often people just need the listening ear. And very often, obviously, we often find that people are not going to actually ask for help. Welcome back to A to Z here on I'm British Radio with me, sister Zainab. And as I've been talking about helping the needy, and especially the needy in terms of our time, our advice, maybe our knowledge. And obviously, I just want to also remind all of us that people will not necessarily tell us. They don't always tell us what's going on in our lives. So sometimes we actually need to be aware of that and actually just sort of check in on our friends. And obviously this is something that's that we're asked to do anyway. We should sort of, if we haven't heard from someone, and see, I think it's after 3 days, we should check on someone. So, you know, obviously, and we're all connected, let's say, virtually these days anyway, by through social media, or we just sort of chat with people on the phone.